Hash tables are effective for caching, database joins, even partitioning distributed databases, sharding sets to check if something is there or not. It's very, very effective, even load balancing. A lot of programming languages implement that in-house, you know, in natively in the language. You can build these hash tables. However, what I want to discuss in this episode of the Backend Engineering Show is the limitations and the cost of using hash tables and, you know, things that we really don't think about. It comes back to the leaky abstractions of, hey, there's a black box, it's fast, let me use it. But we don't understand how it works. And when you don't understand how something works, you can get away with it. But sometimes when it doesn't work, that's where you really get screwed. And that's where really a good engineer is, I identify him or herself from the other engineers. How about we jump into and discuss this? Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. This is the show where we discuss the art and the craft of building software and cover recent news on backend technologies. If you enjoy the show, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and rate it on Spotify and Apple Podcast. With that said, let's get on the show. Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. And this is our laid-back, chill discussion podcast kind of video audio format. If you can listen in the podcast, if you're listening on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, you can listen on that. And this is just basically, I don't include graphics or I don't include anything. It's just a long-form discussion about one topic, and I try to go as deep as possible to my extent of knowledge on this topic to tease apart this topic. And today's topic is hash tables. In order to discuss what hash tables are, we really need to understand what arrays are. You might say, Hussein, I don't care. I understand what arrays are. Do you think I'm dumb? I know what are arrays, and I know how they work. You'll be surprised that we take a lot of things for granted. Arrays is one of them. The concept of array is a consecutive slots of memory. And this is the key word, memory. You cannot put an array on disk. It doesn't make any sense. Right. Well, until ultra RAM is a thing and we can do byte addressability in the disk. But arrays are a property of the random access memory, you know. And the power of this is because it is consecutive. No matter how large the array is, given the index, I can go to the first node, to the first element of the array, or I can go to the middle one, or I can go to any, to the last one, or any element in almost constant cost, big O of one, as the computer science guys say. It's so fast because of this byte addressability, because every index is associated with a memory address, and to get the next one is literally just add one to the memory address and we can get there. And if you ask the CPU to fetch a value of that, whatever the element has, whether an integer or a string or anything, you can immediately go there and fetch the value. And that's the powers of the array. And hash tables are nothing but a glorified arrays, to be honest. So you can ask the CPU to fetch a value from an array in memory by giving it its index. From the index, we're going to find the first address and going to add X amount of value, you know, to find that particular index. So the cost is really an addition plus the cost to go to the memory from the CPU, right? So the first one is constant. Addition is cheap. It is done in the CPU itself. The other cost to actually jump to the memory is really depending on your architecture of the CPU. And we can really dive deep into this. This is probably another episode itself. The cost to fetch a value from the RAM to the CPU, it really depends on the distance from where the CPU lives, the memory. You know, in multi-core architecture, you have multiple CPUs and you have a single memory, and they compete in the memory. Only one CPU can access the memory at a given time, and so there's some sort of a competing going on. So you what happens is some certain architecture, there will be two memory locations, right? And in each CPU access its local memory. And that's obviously becomes faster, right? Because there is no competing anymore. No CPU is competing on the memory. The problem with this is now this CPU sometimes might need to access a memory all over there that is available, that's closer to other CPU. And that's what is called the NUMA architecture, the non-uniform memory access, you know. So this can be slow. And this is where guys like Apple is innovating to making the cost of accessing the memory as fast as possible by having everything into a single SoC chip, which is the M1 Pro. And then they just came up with an M1 Ultra, which fuses two M1, you know, SoC chips, such that the cost to jump between different memory is negligible. They just made this great, you know, design, such that you don't, as a programmer, you don't really need to, oh, if my array is all over there, I really have to execute my code on this CPU. You know, this is the NOMA aware programming. Obviously, this is a little bit of discussion. We can go into other day, but the cost is, you can call it constant. It's fast. It can be faster in certain architecture. So that's the array. The array, the problem with the arrays is it's an integer based, right? So 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So if you can have your key as that index, you won, right? The problem is, like, how many applications where the key is actually an integer and it is actually this particular index? It's almost very little, right? This is where hashing table comes to use the concept of arrays in a very intelligent manner. What do they do? Second example. So I have, an ID student, you know, and I want to find their name. Let's say this is a key value store, you know. The ID is obviously a large number, has nothing to do with the index. So what do you do? Is you want, giving the ID, I want immediately to find the name of the student. So the value is the name, the integer, the key is the ID of the student. So given that ID student, what you do is you build a hash table. What do? You effectively take the IDs and you create a hash off of them using a hash function. And that gives you a garbage value, right? So that if you hash the same value again, you're going to get the same hash. Given that hash, you then take that value and then calculate an index that points to an array. That's the trick. And the most easy way is to do a modular function. So let's say your hash table size, your array size is 10, you know? So if you calculate, if you give it this ID, you do modulo 10, you do a hash, and then you do modulo 10, and you get a value between 0 and 9. And that's the power. Because you eventually have an index, you can immediately go to that array value in that index and fetch the value, which is the name of the student in this particular case. And that's the power of hash tables. And so now, given an actual key, I can find the value using the power of array. Well, you might say, there are problems with this, obviously, right? It's like, how about collision? You know, sometimes I might get two student IDs that maps to the same hash, which then maps to the same index. Well, that's your responsibility to solve. And we're going to talk about this in the limitations option or portion of this video. So now we know hash tables. So then now we understand hash tables, the idea of hashing something to eventually get an index, which we're going to use to point to an array, which has our values. So one popular use case is database joining. So if you have two relations and you want to join these relations based on a foreign key, you know, you're going to use the idea of hashing, hash tables. Let's say you want to join the company table to the employee table where you have a company ID field. So this employee belongs to this company, right? So in order to join these two tables, you're going to pick one of the relations and you're going to create a hash table. And focus on this word, create a hash table. The hash table doesn't exist. You create it, and there is a cost to creating a hash table. So usually in a join, you pick the smaller relation because creating hash table is expensive because you gotta loop through every single one and take the value, hash it, and give the index, and then go to that array that you hopefully you have already pre-allocated, and then store the value for that index in that particular array. And you're going to do everything for every single value. So that means the hash table really has to have a fixed value to start with. You start with, I think this relation is around 1,000, right? It's going to increase 1,000. If you know the size, that's even better. And you say, okay, I want a thousand array element. And so you ask the RAM, hey, give me 1,000 integer consecutive array values. And then you start building the hash tables and you fill all this 1,000. So the first value might go to index 999. The second value might go to the index 78. The third value might go to index 0. And you start filling this hash table. So now, once you build that hash table, you have a beautiful array in memory with indexes, right? But your hash values mean something. There is a mapping between the hash, between the key to the hash, obviously, and then between the hash to the index. And that mapping is what's critical. Now, okay, we have this hash table. What do I do with it? Now you go to the other relation, whatever it is the company either or the employee, whatever is larger in this case, and you loop through it. You pick the first one, first entry of the company ID. So at this point, you don't really know the value. You're just picking one value at a time. Oh, this is company number 705. Let's hash it and let's get the index by using a modulo, right? And then, it's index number 773. Oh, let's go to the memory, right? Let's go to the array. So ask the CPU to fetch that value. And then when you reach the value, you give that company complete row, which is the name of the company, the whatever, how many employees, whatever. You've put the entire row that you need. Obviously, you don't put the entire row. You put exactly based on the select query that joined, you know, so that there's like a blob field. You don't just put it if the user didn't ask for it, right? So that's why select star sometimes kills the performance, because look at all this stuff that it needs to do, right? Has to put in the hash table, has to fetch it from the database, from disk. So select star is really harmful. Start not to do it if you don't need to. And and you start just probing. This is the second star. It's called probing. You probe. Boop, 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 boop. And this probe is cost big O of one, because it's very fast. Because the hash has a cost, it's constant. And the go and give me that index also has a fixed cost. Again, depends on whether you're NUMA versus not NUMA architecture and your CPU and how far your CPU is from the RAM, all that jazz. But it's almost, let's say it's constant, right? If you're at that stage, that's where you basically optimize. That's a different level altogether. And frankly, above my head, you know, it's just so much details. But yeah, this, you go there and you fetch the value. So now, if you found the value, that means there is a match. If you didn't, that means, hey, this value doesn't exist, so I don't join it. And you create an output relation as a result. That's how you join. That's a hash join. Obviously, there's optimization and different hash joins, and I think I'm going to make another episode talking about hash joins, because they're like mammoth. What I just explained is the classical hash join, you know. It becomes a problem because what happened if I cannot fit this stuff in memory? No, that's not a part of the limitation. Hash tables are useless if you can't fit them in memory, right? Because the whole point is, because the whole thing is an array, you have to fit the array into memory so you can use the byte addressability of the RAM. Again, unless someone invents a byte addressable disk, all of these problems will go away, hopefully. I think there are a lot of attempts. Ultra RAM was the latest that I'm aware of, you know, which is basically a persisted disk value that is just as fast as the RAM, but is also persisted. You know, I'm going to reference the video that I talk about Ultra RAM. But yeah, a lot of the storage people, you know, they talk about this, they eat this for dinner effectively. But yeah, this is the idea of hash tables, hash joins, very, very popular concept. Now I want to talk about the limitations of hash tables. And this is where you really kind of link to the previous topic with hash joins. Basically, watch out. Again, hash tables have to fit in memory to be utilized. And that's the biggest, biggest problem, I guess, you know? It's like, what happened if you, because that's the first thing people will say is, hey, I'm going to bin my entire key value store as a hash table. Hey, let's put the entire customer database as a hash table. No, you can't. How? What kind of, how much memory do you need to put the entire thing in memory? Because that's what you need to do, right? Let alone just building that goddamn thing. You know, you need to build it first. And to build it is costly, because to build it, you have to scan the entire thing. That's a big O of N. You can scan the entire thing, pull it in memory to build it, and that's a cost. Maybe you can consider this a fixed cost, right? And then once you build that, then you have to, all of that, get it in memory. Otherwise, if it's not in memory, you have no idea which parts will be fetched next. I think you can play games here where you can play the idea of having, I don't know if you have low level access to the RAM, where you say, hey, if someone asks access this location and it's not in RAM, go fetch it from disk. You can build data structures like that, I believe. But I don't believe it's going to be easy, right, to do that. Maybe they do exist and I'm not aware of them. Please let me know if you have worked with such like disk hybrid model. But that's the idea, that the limitation is the memory cost. You know, you can't just have a billion size hash table, you know. Plus that's one thing, the key size, and the other thing is the actual values, which is not really, might not be as problematic, because they can live somewhere else, the actual pointers. You know, it's just the indices is what is critical. And then the pointers can live somewhere else, can in the heap of the memory. They don't have to be consecutive. Like a string is not really literally a string that lives in the element itself of the array. It's a pointer to some other location that we don't care about. As long as we have that pointer where we can jump to that memory location, then it's fine. Yeah, it's an extra cost of the CPU, but Intel and AMD and all those peoples are taking care of these optimizations. But yeah, this is one of the two limitations. The cost of building the hash table is a cost, right? That's why you always pick the smallest in case of a join, right? The other one is the memory. Like you have to make sure it fits in the memory. And there are workarounds for this. I believe one alternative to hash joins is to avoid probing all over again, because you have to scan this other relation to always just go back and jump, right? And that can be costly if you do it over and over and over again. So you can effectively partition stuff. It says, okay, let me just work with a smaller subset instead of the entire table. Let me just create partitions. Any value that I'm scanning, I'm going to create a partition that is closer to each other, and then I'm going to store it to disk and then read the partition from disk and then hash table that. This way, you don't have to scan the entire, build an entire hash table of the entire relation. You just partition it and chunk it, you know, work with it smaller size. So that's another limitation. There are workarounds, obviously. The final thing is really what the biggest problem with hash tables is what happened if I want to keep adding new keys. I want to delete a key. I want to add a new one and delete one. Deleting and adding to a hash table really screws up everything. Why? Because remember, we're doing a hash and then we're doing a modulo on the size of the hash table. So now if you have a value and you hash it and a value of like from 0 to 10, like the value, you hash it, you do a modulo on 10, then you get a value from 0 and 9, right? So let's say you get 8. But what happens if you add another element? Right now your hash table is 11. Now the modulo operation, if you do it modulo 11, you're gonna get a different value, and now you're not pointing to the same index anymore. So you have to do a remapping after you add or delete, and that is costly, right? So you have to scan the entire thing and then just reshift things. It might not be as expensive. Sometimes it's easy. Sometimes it's slow, you know. But that cost of remapping, you have to keep it in mind. Sometimes that's why people just say, okay, I'm going to work with, I'm not going to resize my hash table. It's always going to be, I don't know, it's always going to be 10, you know. And as a result, you don't anticipate that it's going to be increasing, right? But again, if you fix it too large, then you're consuming a lot of memory and you might have gaps. If it's too small, then you might add values to the hash table and that will cause remapping. And that's a problem with Cassandra and Shard, any sharding database, a distributed database, right? The problem is to do sharding, you kind of use a hash table, right? Because if I'm doing a query and this is my node, right? You don't really specify a node per se, but you're based on the key. So like if I'm inserting value 8, you hash that and then the value will map to a node or a shard or a partition. Even partitioning, you can do hash partitioning. Right. I'm talking about hash partitioning here, not range partitioning. Range is easy. It's like from 0 to 10,000, go to this server. From 10,001 to 20,000, go to this server. From 20,000, you know, you get this idea. But if you are using hash-based sharding, then every value is hashed, and then you calculate an index, and that index points to an array, and the value of that index in the array gives you the server name. Then you hit that server. But what happens if you add a new server? Then the whole thing changes, right? Then what do you do? If it changes, then all of a sudden, if you try to read a key, instead of going to that particular server, the remapping has changed. Now you're going to another server and you're not going to find the key. That's why Cassandra sometimes struggle with this. When you do a remapping, it's really hard. You know, they solved all these problems, but I'm just discussing the original problem here, right? I say initially, right? So like if you add something, a node to the ring, then the neighboring rings has to share values because now you're remapping keys. So the if I'm adding value to a node, I need to join this value to this ring, this cluster, and now I have to borrow values from my neighbors based on this remapping. You know, because now I no longer hold this key after this remapping. This guy holds this key. So you have to reshard. And this is where another concept was invented in 1997, I believe, called consistent hashing, where they try to minimize the effect of this remapping. Because the remapping is expensive, right? So consistent hashing, maybe another topic, solves this to minimize the effect after adding or deleting a node. Because remember, in a distributed architecture, you're going to add and remove nodes all the time. So consistent hashing, the idea of having to consistently always hash to the same server no matter what, is very, very critical. And maybe that's another topic for another day. I hope you enjoyed this episode. What do you think about hash tables? How are you using it? Did you run into any problems that you can share? Let me know in the comment section below. I'm going to see you in the next one. You guys stay awesome. Goodbye.